from North State Public Radio, I'm Andre Bayek with your headlines for Wednesday, October 26th. Australia has been seeing more flu cases than it has in the past 5 years. That can mean that the North State and the rest of the country will see something similar. Later in this report, we'll have an interview with an associate professor of biological sciences at Chico State to find out why. But first, the news. California regulators have proposed fining Pacific Gas and Electric more than $155 million for sparking a 2020 wildfire in Shasta County. The Zog fire destroyed 200 homes and left 4 people dead. The California Public Utilities Commission said in its proposed order yesterday that PG&E failed to remove 2 failing trees flagged for removal. One fell into a distribution line and started the fire. PG&E says in a statement that it's reviewing the proposed order. It can either comply or request a hearing. PG&E has pleaded not guilty to 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter charged by the Shasta County District Attorney's Office. In state news, a Stockton judge yesterday denied the request for a gag order in the case of a Wesley Brownlee charged in a string of serial killings. Cap Radio's Rich Ibarra reports that part of the reason for the denial was the ongoing investigation.
43-year-old Wesley Brownlee is charged with 3 murders, but another 3 killings are believed to be linked to the accused gunman. 5 of those killings occurred in Stockton, the other in Oakland. Both the district attorney and the Stockton police chief have made public statements both before and after his arrest. Brownlee's attorney, Allison Norbert, argued to have future statements to the press banned.
And that is what is at stake here, Your Honor. My client's right to the presumption of innocence.
Deputy DA Elton Grau called the protective order overbroad.
The order that the defense has created will chill the ability of law enforcement to continue investigating this case.
With the denial, Brownlee will return to court November 14th for further arraignment. In Stockton, I'm Rich Ibarra.
California voters will weigh in on high-profile political offices like governor and Congress this fall, but they'll also be voting on 4 California Supreme Court justices. Here's why, according to CalMatters Justice reporter Bieronda Lyons.
California voters only vote on Supreme Court and appellate court justices every gubernatorial election, so every 4 years. It's called a retention election, and voters can either vote yes or no if they want to keep a justice on the bench. Typically, overwhelmingly, justices are retained. However, in the case, say, one is voted off the bench, then the governor would have an opportunity to appoint someone else.
CalMatters reporter Bieronda Lyons talking about state Supreme Court elections. California has one of the most diverse Supreme Court benches in the country. And finally, influenza cases usually begin to increase in October in the United States, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. While every flu season is different, one indicator of what this season might be like is to look at flu activity in countries in the Southern Hemisphere, which starts earlier than here. To get projections, NSPR's Sarah Bohannon recently spoke with Chico State Associate Professor of Biological Sciences, Troy Klein, about what North State residents need to know, including what Australia's flu season might tell us about our own this year.
Australian epidemiologists and public health officials are reporting influenza activity and a case rate that is above the 5-year average. This isn't terribly surprising, is somewhat to be expected, because remember, our last several flu seasons have been quite abnormal. In 2020, 2021, we really didn't have a flu season at all because of COVID mitigation measures that were in place. In 2021, 2022, the flu season here started out relatively normal, but seemed to end earlier than it normally does. And that may have to do with COVID mitigation measures as well.
And so are there any predictions about what we might see this year in the United States, especially, you know, without having those mitigations?
So it's expected that our flu season is probably going to be involve a higher case rate than normal. Part of that is because we're getting back to not masking, or we are back to not masking. Businesses aren't shut down. Schools are fully open. So we're expecting to have a higher than average flu season. Part of that is because, again, for the last 2 seasons, our flu numbers have been really low in the United States. So overall, immunity in the population is lower, which means more of us are susceptible and primed to be infected again, maybe for the first time in a few years.
And so with that information, what should people be thinking in terms of precautionary measures this year?
So the flu vaccine is always good for everybody. So the CDC recommends the influenza vaccine for everybody, children all the way up to those who are over the age of 65. And the flu vaccine is very protective. It is a very effective vaccine at protecting against hospitalization, ICU admission, and fatality. So there have been a number of studies over the last 5 to 10 years showing that the influenza vaccine is effective at preventing severe disease and hospitalization and death. The range in those studies is anywhere from 40% up to 70% effective at preventing severe illness. Something else that people should have in mind, especially for those who are at high risk, and again, that's going to be those who are over the age of 65, or those who have some underlying complication, some other pulmonary or heart disease. So something to consider for these individuals is we're going to see influenza virus and SARS-CoV-2 co-circulating this year, but symptoms are going to be really similar. You're coughing, you're fatigued, you have chills, night sweats, headaches, these kinds of symptoms could be either COVID-19 or influenza virus. There are studies that show co-infection with those two viruses. People who are co-infected with those two viruses usually do worse than those who are dealing with a single COVID illness or influenza virus infection. So for those who are at particularly high risk for severe illness, one measure that's going to be really important for those people this year is to get tested. If you have respiratory symptoms, get tested because there are therapeutic measures that can be taken to treat the illness, but those are going to be different for COVID-19 than they are for influenza. And so those people are going to want to, as soon as they start having those respiratory symptoms, get tested to find out whether it's COVID or whether it's influenza virus, and then talk with their physician about whether or not one of these therapeutic treatment measures is right for them.
And then when is the best time to get a flu vaccine? You know, some people kind of try to wait until a little bit later. You know, a lot of clinics are happening now. When's the best time?
I think the best time is whenever it fits your schedule, right? So if that's now, go get your flu shot now. If you're really busy right now and it's going to be 2 or 3 weeks from now, don't not get it because it's November or December. Still get that vaccine. It's still going to protect you through a flu season that can last well into the spring. So this is the time of year here in mid-October when the CDC starts reporting weekly influenza activity across the country. And we're beginning to see already in parts of the country, overall, the influenza activity is low across the country. But in the Southeast and even in Texas, influenza activity is already considered high, which is a little bit abnormal for this time of year. And so that's where some of the predictions are coming from, that this could be a particularly bad flu year. So we're already seeing flu activity begin to tick up in parts of the country. So this, even if you don't typically get your flu shot this time of year, maybe this year you want to get it a little bit earlier than normal.
I guess as a virologist, you know, when you think about the flu, I'm just wondering how you think of it, especially with coronavirus, the pandemic. We heard about like the 1918 flu, and I think a lot of people now don't think of it as a serious illness, the flu, and I'm just wondering how you think of it.
I see where those people are coming from. I mean, and I sort of have to fight against that pattern of thought myself because I'm a middle-aged, relatively healthy man. And so I recognize that if I were to get an influenza virus infection and you feel really crappy for a week or a week and a half, but you get over it, the illness resolves and you get over it without any serious complications. But I think people also have to consider that even if they're not at risk themselves for severe disease, most of us do in some capacity associate with people who are at high risk. So we have elderly parents or grandparents. We have really young children or cousins or nieces or nephews or grandchildren who are also at high risk because their immune systems are not yet fully developed. And so when we're getting a flu shot, when I'm getting a flu shot, I'm cognizant of the fact that I'm also taking a step to protect the overall wellness of the community and those with whom I associate. And there are also people that we associate with, interact with, who are relatively young or middle-aged. They look healthy and vibrant, but we don't know if they if they deal with some sort of immunosuppressive state or illness that would leave them at high risk. And so we can't always tell who is at high risk and who we are potentially exposing to a serious illness if we aren't protecting ourselves.
That was Troy Klein, Chico State Associate Professor of Biological Sciences, speaking with NSPR's Sarah Bohannon. You can find an extended version of the interview on our website, mynspr.org. And those are your headlines for Wednesday, October 26th. Our theme song is Burrow and courtesy of Blue Dot Sessions. For NSPR News, I'm Andre Bayek.